This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. In the back half of this hour, we're going to go to the talk lines. We got a lot of texts coming in about my monologue relative to public records, and I'd really like to hear from you. I tried to present a perspective of both being a public servant as well as now working on this side relative to the media and the importance of the maintenance of public records and dissemination the same. Relative to requests made by the public, it seems as though there's a move afoot in the state legislature to eliminate any personal liability of elected officials for standing in the way of the public getting records. And that's one of the most safe and secure ways of making sure that people are responsive. I know I took that seriously. So we'll go to the talk lines and to hear from you. Joining us now in our NOLA Coalition segment, Elon Jones, Executive Director of NOLA Code, joins us. We have been the beneficiary of being able to interview folks that are difference makers in our community. So many of them. It's been so rewarding, and I'm sure today's not going to be any different. Elon, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
How are you? So tell us about NOLA Code.
Yes, at NOLA Code, what we focus on is bringing joy to students through teaching code and computer science.
Wow, that's a big topic. So what grades are y'all working with?
I
remember the key punch cards of Fortran and COBOL back in my early college days and still have nightmares about same. I'm sure it's vastly different today.
A little bit. Well, I'd say yes and no. Just fun fact, kind of with COBOL, those are going to be kind of some of your most highly paid jobs because kind of once you have a specialty system built, you really don't want to give it up.
Right, exactly.
But the other thing that is kind of still the same is the thought process behind how to code. And that's really what we focus on since we are with grades K through 8 is what we work with. And we're also piloting some cybersecurity classes in the 9th grade.
So what has been the student reaction to this? I got to imagine at first blush, they're kind of like, what are you talking about, code?
I would say maybe right there is definitely a slight misconception when I, you know, maybe about 10 years ago when I went into the classroom at first and they would say, you know, like, what's code or what's that? But then now these days, all you have to do is say, you know, do you have a phone or are there any games that you like to play on your phone? All the hands go up. And then I say, well, in this class, we're going to learn how to design an app or make a game. And it really just takes off on its own from there.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to maybe check myself because if I have a problem with my phone, I give it to my 10-year-old granddaughter who finds a solution for me. Right.
Exactly. So you know firsthand, and a lot of our parents are exactly that same way, too. So we found it's actually a really great connection point in the home. You know, like I have them sometimes, you know, draw a picture of their favorite app and it's this little phone screen. And then they take out their, you know, the phone or whichever, and they start talking right over about it. It really is a wonderful, joyous thing to be able to serve as a point of connection to spark conversations between children and parents, really children and anyone.
Elon, this may sound like a crazy question, but, you know, oftentimes we tie a subject matter to a part of the brain. Do we know whether or not there is that tie with coding?
That is a great question. So I would really love to maybe take a moment and just really just kind of give a huge shout out to the Louisiana Department of Education. They are currently working on some really great innovative policy that will hopefully allow computer science to be counted for kind of as a language credit. There has been kind of minimalish interest on, you know, learning code is like a language. That's a pretty contentious debate. However, what we at NOLA Code do stand by are computational thinking skills. And that's teaching a child or teaching anyone how to think like a computer, how to think more efficiently. And that skill set is really broad range and really develops the critical thinking skills that are widely applicable no matter what anyone chooses to study or dig into.
I guess I know that my listening audience interest is piqued. I mean, if I walk into the kindergarten class, what would I expect to hear and see?
Slightly loaded question. I'll say for a non-educator, someone who doesn't really work in classrooms around with children, what you see, you might categorize as mayhem and chaos. However, for an educator, you know, just looking under the surface, you'll see in a kindergarten class, let's say in an elementary school class, you'll see students coloring, doing things that, you know, pattern matching, having them create patterns, taking that pattern and putting it inside a puzzle piece to create a loop such that instead of having to write something endlessly long that would, you know, equate to paragraphs and paragraphs of code, we're teaching them how to think more efficiently. If you're doing the same thing over and over again, how might you code a loop so that you can do that, think more like a computer, do that huge long task, but break it down into, you know, just 10 steps as opposed to, you know, 500.
And obviously it builds exponentially over those years. So what would you expect to see in an eighth grade class?
In an eighth grade class, I'd say probably the same thing. On the surface, again, it might look to the untrained eye like it's just kids in a classroom having fun, kind of where's the learning? But again, the learning comes from the ability to take those skills that you've learned in that younger age, you know, how to think efficiently or think more efficiently, and then we give them real-world problems. So, for example, one exercise that we did with one of our classes is think about how you might design an app that would solve a problem in your community. And I love that the students themselves came up with one called Recycle Reminder. There's so much trash, but we want to recycle. How will we help remind people that it's time to take out the recycle so that, you know, things aren't just going to waste or just being piled up and forgotten? So they then built out a wireframe, which means they kind of went through the design process of what would the user want to see that would be a useful app for them. And they did these presentations on it. And honestly, there is a scaffold for a perfectly feasible working app that could be implemented in NOLA if, you know, a developer felt like putting some time towards that.
And, you know, the reason I ask the question that way is, you know, I've been to Idea Village functions and Entrepreneurial Week, and you know, you interact with young adults, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, that are doing a lot of what you're just discussing. And it's almost like this, how do I characterize it? This freedom of expression, this ability, you know, to sit back and just view things in your own unique perspective and provide sustenance to it through the development of a program or otherwise. And some of the most brilliant kids I've ever been around in my life. And, you know, I laugh at myself all the time. I've never felt more dumb than being in that environment. But I got to imagine that this is just huge for these K through eighth graders. And as you describe what you just described, it fits perfectly with my vision of that freedom, right?
Yes, and I truly am so glad that you kind of opened up the discussion to that, because with a lot of frequently computer science is really tied to the hard sciences, or your, you know, think your math or your engineering, and it's that kind of siloed approach that has historically been used that's really caused a lot of the kind of gender and even racial sort of segregation that you really see in a lot of in the computer science or the coding careers. But sort of more recently, there has been a lot of people really waking up to the fact that it's not just, you know, the numbers matrix that we all remember, those green just digits going down the screen. It really is a way to harness the inner creativity of anyone, whether they are inclined towards the math or sciences or not. It's a way to harness your inner creativity and it take that out of you and make it something tangible that can then be used to interact with the world. Any app, it starts from an idea. It's an internal spark. What code does is it really lowers that barrier of entry of getting that internal spark that you have in yourself, of making that into something concrete that you can use to change the world outside around you for the better.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, like with recycling, what I found that there was a lot of day-in, day-out activities that were involved in that these young kids, young adults, have figured out a more efficient way of doing it, you know, that you don't
mm-hmm.
And I remember interviewing someone that had a unique way of the electronic card reader to get in your hotel room. And it was like this shattering thing that they developed, and it's like, wow, what, that was pretty obvious. What, why did it take us so long to get from point A to point B?
Yeah, no, and that really is the great thing about kind of working with youth and exposing youth to this at such a young age, is that before there are all these expectations of what the world should be, or before you have a full, before you're kind of bound in by the constraints of what the laws or rules of the world are, you're really able to approach things from a creative, novel perspective. And, you know, think of something as simple as, why do I have to have a, you know, a physical key or something separate to get into my, you know, room when I can program just these two separate little things to interact with each other, and then I can have all that on my mobile device.
Right. You know, it's really interesting. You know, when you talked about that siloed approach, I mean, it's still important, the fundamentals of a lot of this, right? The math and the computer science and the framework of it. But really the only limit is the limit of your ingenuity, your thought process, you know, of your imagination, quite frankly, you know, in many respects.
Yes, that's so true. So really the way that we're able to implement and better connect with youth is that what teaching computational thinking skills and computer science, what that allows us to do is just open up a new way to teach math. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm not exactly sure what your experience was in school, but for me, math was a lot of rote memorizations of, you know, my multiplication skills, my division, and a lot of kind of figuring out word problems that someone else had created. It teaches that same skill, but when we're teaching it through code, it's what is something that you see in the world around you? Now let's create something that will help solve that problem. We're still teaching those same skills. For example, you do need to understand math to know how many different times must I loop around these particular commands to get an outcome. So all those math skills, all those other skills, they're still in there. It's just opening up a new way to connect with students and, you know, really bring them, bring out what's really the best in all of them.
Would it be considered like experiential learning? I mean, it's kind of having a set of building blocks in front of you, right?
Yes, most assuredly. That is definitely a great term that can be applied.
And obviously outcomes by most studies that I've reviewed, and, you know, it's just been a small snippet of studies, but nonetheless have revealed that kids learn more faster and become more creative as a result thereof.
Yes. I mean, so, and it really does seem like it's purely intuitive, but I think there really is this aha moment of students or anyone really, we hold on more firmly, we're able to understand more quickly and form a deeper understanding of things that are related to us. So rather than, again, you know, just a problem or a word problem that's, you know, put in front of me in a workbook, if it's something that's directly about my community, I'm already more invested in that. So anything I learned through that already has a connection to me.
Ilan, if anyone wants to reach out to you guys, interested in helping you out or maybe inviting you in, where would they go?
We've got a website. It is noacode.org. There is a contact us little button right at the bottom there. We love to hear from people, love volunteers, and just really anyone wanting to learn more specifically about these initiatives. I also would encourage them to visit the Louisiana Department of Education website. Again, they've got some great stuff going on right now, specifically around computer science policy. It's a great time to be involved and learn more.
Absolutely. And y'all are in, so y'all affiliate with individual schools, is that correct?
Yes, we do. So that is something that really is our true focus. Before and above everything is teaching kids. I actually stepped out of my classroom for a moment to take this call. So yes, we do work directly with schools.
Well, before it gets too crazy in your classroom, we want to thank you for joining us and spending this time with us. Best of luck to you and NOLA Code. We really appreciate the work that you're doing in our community day in, day out. Best of luck to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Always great to chat with people in the community.
Thank you. Ilan Jones, the executive director of NOLA Code. You can check it out at nolacode.org. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. If you would like to talk about this public records stuff that's going on in the state legislature, we talked about it coming out of the box at 10 a.m. this morning. Love to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. We'd love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Talk Jewelers Talk and Text line. We spent some time coming out at 1010 this morning about the Public Records Act and talked about my thoughts, having served on both sides of this issue as both a public official, as a second in command, and actually responsible for the responses to the Public Records Act for a number of years. I kind of know the skinny on a lot of what goes on there. I understand some of the frustrations, but in the end, I believe that if we are going to create this governmental star chamber, it's not going to bode well for government at all. And a lot of the secrecy and what we're trying to secrete is really not personal in nature. I mean, a lot of what they're trying to do is restrict your ability to gain access to records about how public money is being spent. And that in and of itself should be a cause for concern for everyone. And I said this before, and I mean it again, and I'll say it again, and I mean it. There are not many touchstone issues out there that, in my view, would warrant suggesting that you not vote for these individuals that vote to pass these bills in this state legislature, and I don't care who's behind it. I don't fear any of them. But if your local state rep, state senator, or otherwise votes in favor of restricting public records from this day forward and your access to same, they are not worthy of your vote. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. It doesn't, I can't say it any other way, because they are just attacking the basic fundamental issue in government, which is about you have to have trust, and trust is based on actions, not words. How they act. All of this, if you got nothing to hide, then what do you fear? What do these people fear? That's what I would love to know. What do they fear? Why would they want to restrict emails and all other forms of communication? What do you fear? A lot of folks are calling in saying, give us bill numbers. There's several. There's Senate Bill 482. There's a number of other bills, but 482 probably being one of the big ones right now. And if you just go look at a number of the news articles that have been proposed, I looked at two or three of them. The other is, and I had my list here and I can't find it now, Senate Bill 423, House Bill 768, and there are others. I think there are as many as 10 that I remember counting up that touch on different aspects of the Public Records Act. Don't worry about who the author is. Worry about whether or not your folks are voting for any of these. And you want to get on the phone and let them know where you stand. Let them know where you stand and why they want to prevent shining the light on these records, their actions, who they talk to, why, you know, these communications. A lot of times, I don't know about you, but things happen and you scratch your head and you say, why did that happen? How did that happen? What went on there? What happened here? You know, you begin to find out about communications, you ask about it, you know, and they want to shield that from you. And this went back in, you know, in the Jindal administration. And at the time, I recall that with the ethics rules that, you know, he was trying to, that governor then was trying to get the gold star, and they had all kinds of silly stuff that they had in there that made, but it was personal in nature, like your health care that was going to be, I don't want to know about any elected officials' health care. That's their personal issue. I don't know about you, but I have no interest in knowing who their doctor is, why their doctor is, when their doctor is. I don't need to know information like that. But they use examples such as that. People put in public records requests on that. It's not a public record. They have no right to that. There's a lot of protections there already. Relative to the privacy, or some say the privacy, of the individuals. And I'm not sure that it needs to be expanded in any way. You know, there are those, Blake Miguez says that his bill aims to cut down on what he described as proliferation of requests sent by nameless people to government agencies. Well, I don't disagree that there's been an abuse there, and maybe there's some limited way that we can deal with that issue as it relates to those, but you can't throw the whole thing out. Now they have AI. Now we're engaging conjecture. He says that they have programs that can go and hit every agency head with all these requests, weigh them down. But the press and the public have a right to know, so I'm trying to balance that. You know, again, These are things that what we ought to do is we ought to have public hearings. We ought to have the public opine on these issues before we start introducing these bills at the last moment where there's not a lot of heads up that this is coming our way. Why? Because they don't want to have momentum develop in opposition to these bills because they know it's a very slippery slope. They know this. They're not stupid people. They're very sophisticated politicians. They know how to massage the system. They know how to deal with these issues. So don't be misled, you know, when we're trying to balance that. Now, you're not trying to balance that because you're not giving balance to the issue by allowing the public to opine at all. And that's part of the problem here. It's the same thing that's going on with this constitutional convention concoction, this exotic way of trying to deal with this issue in a very expedited fashion where the public's not going to have any say-so at all. 144 legislators and 27 appointees by the governor. And we figured out that, you know, I'm sure that's not an arbitrary number. That's how many he needs in order to get past whatever the threshold is to get this to move along. I am certain, but it's conjecture on my part. But I don't think that you reach that arbitrary number without reason, right? So these folks know what they're doing and how they're going to go about doing it. And you don't have much time because one of these provisions has already passed out of committee on a unanimous vote. And, you know, and it's rocking along. It's headed to the House now. And we'll see. Hopefully, I read a piece that was done by Clancy Dubose. I think he's spot on. You know, I share a lot of his observations in that piece, his feelings about it. I feel the same way. Again, speed to the end is not what we should be concerned about because we're giving up our individual rights to be a check on local government, state government, by virtue of these bills. You've heard me say often that your life is more influenced by local government than state or federal government. These are state laws, and they're going to be able to adopt whatever is passed there. And if you want to feel what it's like to get shut out, visit the world or envision the world according to these bills. And you're going to find out real quick how that's going to happen. And as I said before, what do they fear? What is it about a number of these provisions that they're trying to do away with that they actually fear? What are they creating now, or what do they anticipate creating? Because we're in the infancy of this administration. What is it that this administration fears moving forward relative to the Public Records Act? I would love to hear someone from the administration articulate a particular fear that they have or a particular outcome that is so disruptive to the operations of government that they feel compelled to limit the rights of individuals within the state of Louisiana. And at least then we can create a public discourse about what this is all about. And maybe there might be a little tweak here or a tweak there that the public might be willing to support. I don't know. Emphasis on, I don't know. You don't know, I don't know, no one knows. They're now trying to explain around it because I have to imagine they're getting some pressure. The reality is they need more. The reality is that there needs to be the articulation of the outcome that you pass these kind of things, we're just not voting for you again. Maybe that's next, that they shield how they vote on issues. Maybe you're not going to have a right to know that, because they want to make sure that they insulate themselves from public opinion, public discourse, being repudiated by the public, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's what they fear. See, in Congress, they were a little bit more sophisticated about how they do this. They figured out that they weren't going to have single-issue bills, right? That's why they don't want it, because that way you can tattoo an individual with a vote on a singular issue. They put this conglomeration of issues together, many of which are not even germane to the original filing of the bill, and they have bastardized the meaning of the word germane, and therefore everyone has an out. There's something in every bill that doesn't deal with the controversial portion of the bill as to their reasoning and rationalization of why it was okay for them to not vote for the bill. And this is an observation relative to both all three, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. They all engage in this silly exercise, and they really think they're fooling the public. They're not. We see through it, right? And there are a lot of people pointing out the hypocrisy of what's actually going on. And maybe that's the path where we're going to end up being. It is that we're going to start to begin to see rules that are more like Washington-based conduct. Well, I don't know about you, but I certainly don't want any part of that in Louisiana. There are those that desire that. I am not one of them, and nor should you be, if I may be so boldest to suggest, because that's a complete bastardization of so many different principles in the internal machinations of Congress, that if anyone really understood how that process works, there is the possibility of tyrannical thoughts, because it's crazy. And it has everything, it has nothing to do with you. And that's the thing that continues to mystify me as to why we allow folks to get away with that. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. On a text line, private donors are going to be allowed to pay for the activities of the Constitutional Convention. Well, that's what was originally proposed. Not a good idea, in my view. That doesn't help with developing trust. If this is such an important exercise, one would think that government should be paying for it, right? On their own. We don't need private donors to come in and provide sustenance for this process. Why would we want to do that? I can't think. Again, what are we thinking? Why is that provision important to this process? One has to ask. Right? Got another text, Sheriff. I have to say it was unbelievably great how you, a Republican, called out Bobby Jindal, a fellow Republican, when he was governor, for all the boneheaded things that he did. Sure, many other people in the state congratulate you. I had a number of heated conversations with then Governor Bobby Jindal, as well as his executive staff, on a number of issues. As both an elected official and a non-elected official, after having supported Bobby Jindal in a big way, both Sheriff Harry Lee and myself, he a Democrat, me a Republican, having supported Bobby Jindal. But into the second term, it seemed as though it was a whole different person. Probably two-thirds of the way through the first term, it seemed that way. And for a lot of us that were early onset supporters of Bobby Jindal, felt in many respects that we had been deceived. And I have to say, there were a number, not just me, a lot of ours that called him out on many, many different fronts, and kudos to each and every one. That's how it should work. That's how it should be. As I said before, I don't fear them. I fear what they're doing in many respects, and you should too. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we're going to visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. He published an opinion piece in NOLA.com about this constitutional convention. And he says that this may be opening a Pandora's box, and it's going to be, it's interesting. He's a guy that's really, he's been around a while. He's in the know. He understands the process. I think he's going to have a lot to offer on where the proposed process that we're heading down and the frailties of same. So stay with us, and then we'll visit with Eric Kessler, attorney for Pano, about the crime lab. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.